All right. Hello, hello, and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I'm your host, Mona Sheikh. Today, I have a guest. How should I describe? This guest is an OG, okay? And when I say an OG, let me tell you what that means for me. For me, she is the first Pakistani female comic, which I didn't even know existed before I got even on the scene. This is like, you know. And I watched this woman, and I was in awe of this woman. She has been listed by The Observer as one of the 50 funniest acts in British comedy. You've seen her on a shit ton of stuff. She's been on Winnipeg Comedy Festival. She was on Last Comic Standing. I mean, her credits are beyond. My very, very funny friend, Shazia Mirza. Shazia, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Mona.
Hi, so look nice. At you. You glammed out for me, and I can't tell you how much that means to me.
This lockdown business is an ordeal. It's an ordeal. I mean, you know, you have to dress up, you have to wash,
Yes. You
have to brush your teeth, you've got to put makeup on. I have never had to do this for any phone call in my life.
Yes, that's
and
right.
Now, it's such an ordeal. Yeah. And you know what? When people say, oh, can we talk on the phone? I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they'll go, how about we Zoom or Skype? I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I have to get the shoe polish out. I don't know. I've been going to the shops and getting a lot of shoe polish here.
Wait, what are you doing with the shoe polish?
To do my roots.
What? With the shoe polish?
You know what? These are desperate times. I went to the shop. There was no hair dye left. No hair dye. Because everybody's dyeing their hair. There was no hair dye. There was no mascara. I thought, my God, I've got a really important Zoom meeting. What can I do? Do you know what? I just went for the shoe polish. And you know what? I was in the middle of the meeting. It's so hot here in England. All of a sudden, the shoe polish started melting. And there was black streaks coming down my face. And I'm talking politics and Boris Johnson. And black shoe polish is coming down my face. I just thought, this is a disaster.
Wow. So wait, what happened? Did you stop kind of mid and were like, can you excuse me for a second?
I saw myself in the Zoom screen with like black mouth. I was like, what is that? Maybe it's the screen. I started cleaning the screen. Then I just felt it at the end of my nose. I was like, it's me. I'm melting.
Did you? Why? And this was for like what, like a TV show? What was this for?
This was like for Sky News.
It
was like a news show. It was satirical, and I was just melting.
You were like, this is just telling of the times, like the black polish melting. Did you confront it? Did they ask you like what's going on?
I did. I was like, listen, I've got to stop. Black Lives Matter. This has to stop. This has to stop right now. I matter. I need to just clean myself up.
Oh, my God.
This is an ordeal now.
This is, you know what? We were just talking about this before we started taping that we are living, although you're home and you would think that it would be like comfortable to do these Zoom videos and things like that, but it's actually exhausting. I think for me, I figured out why it's so exhausting. It's because I feel like when I'm around other people, other good people, or like when I go to comedy show, because we love doing that and that's our, you know, livelihood. I feel like you get energized by other people, but at home you're just in complete isolation and you're putting in all this effort, but there's no human interaction. There's no energy that's feeding off. You're just giving all this energy, but you're not really getting anything back. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, it's true. And you know what? We're not moving as much as we normally move.
Yes.
You know, like normally you'd get up, you'd go for a run, you'd go to work, you'd go to the shops, everything's open.
Yeah.
Here, it's very limited now. You know, you do your 1 hour of exercise a day. You don't see your friends. I mean, you're in the house. I mean, everybody I know is getting fat and gray. I tell you, when we get out of here, I mean, people are going to look horrific.
The truth is going to come out. And you know what? You know what the great thing is, though? If you're single, like, you have to accept that person just as it is. Like, you're not, like, you can't even raise standards at this point.
You know what I feel, though? Men being the way that they are.
Yeah.
I think that they will not even consider what women have been through in this lockdown. I think that they will still expect women to come out and just look amazing. Their feet, manicure, pedicure, everything's great. You know, they haven't put weight on. They haven't got hairs growing in unusual places. I think they're gonna just expect women to just be as they are, like nothing ever happened. Because that's how men are.
But don't you think, I think this is the first time where, I think women could have done that earlier too, but women can just basically tell them to fuck off, you know.
Yeah, we can, but I think there's an illusion that women live under. It takes a lot of effort for women to look normal.
That's correct.
You know, for women to just look acceptable, oh my God.
Yes.
There is a whole process that we go through just to get that level.
For 30 minutes today, just this. You don't even want to see the back. You don't want to see anything below this. This took 30 minutes.
And that's, we haven't been able to keep that standard up. Also, like, I don't know when the last time was when you wore a bra, but honestly, I cannot remember the last time I wore a bra. I think it was last year. My breasts have been self-isolating since February.
Have they been social distancing? Or
they have been like one in the kitchen, one in the bathroom. It's been wide open. And I just like, wow, things have got out of hand here.
Now, Chelsea, are you single?
Yeah.
So you're like, of course, I don't assume these things. So have you been doing any Zoom dating? Like, have you been like, no,
I think it's all, you know what it's like. You talk to people online, men are very talkative online, and then all of a sudden you meet them and they shut the fuck up and you think, what happened? You know, what happened with your communication?
Yeah.
And I think this is a great time for them to just be typing away. Well, we all know it's when you meet somebody that you know or you don't know.
Yeah. I agree with you. Okay, let's talk about that. So I don't know what dating is like in London, but LA is actually rated the worst city to date in America. It's like the worst. It's like the bottom of the barrel.
Why is that?
I think it's because it's predominantly entertainment. There's a lot of narcissistic people. Everybody's just all about themselves. People don't really want to take the time to get to know you. There's somebody better waiting around the corner. So I've been on dates with guys who are
You think also that there are a lot of men in the closet?
Men in the closet? It's possible. It's very possible. I mean, look, I live in West Hollywood, the gayest part of Los Angeles.
That's right. Yeah. That's where gay was invented. Gay was invented.
It was invented in West Hollywood at the Abbey, for sure. Yeah. They were like experimenting in the basement and they were like, we have come up with gay. I love living in this neighborhood. I have a ton load of gay friends. I love them. They enhance my life in every single way. But
every woman needs a gay man. Every woman.
Donald Trump needs a gay man in his life because no gay friend would let him go out looking like that. That makeup that's like half. Stop
or
it.
Behaving like that or treating women like that. You have to have gay friends to know how to treat a woman and the value of a woman.
Yes, I 100% agree with you. Let's go back to London dating. I mean, you've been in the business for so long. Do you feel like as a Pakistani Muslim female comic, do you think our challenge of dating is a lot harder than an average
woman? Oh, God, yeah. I mean,
why do you say that?
Absolutely. I mean, because a lot of, if you're looking specifically for a Muslim man or a Pakistani man, they will have certain ideas about how a woman should be, how she should behave, what job she should have. Even the educated ones. In fact, in many ways, the educated ones are worse.
That's correct.
Because they're educated, so they should know better.
That's correct.
Yet they cling on to these values, which are medieval.
That's correct.
I mean, we've all met the Muslim Ted Bundy. We've all had that experience, you know, where the misogynist, the misogynist who's really glad you've got 2 degrees, but at the end of the day, can you make a round chapati?
That's correct.
Can you stay at home? Are you good with kids? Are you loyal? Are you a wife? And I hope you haven't had many boyfriends, because I want to be the only one. I mean, this kind of medieval idea of how women should be, it comes from educated men as well as non-educated men, yes, in our culture, which makes it really difficult. Yes. Because, you know, there's so few of us in comedy.
That's right.
And we all know this is not just a Muslim thing or a cultural thing. A lot of men believe women should not be funny on stage.
That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, they like an amusing wife. They like one with a personality.
Yeah.
But stand-up comedian, you're going a bit far. That's going a bit far now.
You know, Shazia, I was dating about a year and a half ago, about 2 years ago, I was dating this Turkish Muslim guy. His name is let's call him Farouk, because that was his name. He was from the old country, but, you know, he was here. He seemed to have his shit together. He was tall, cute, age appropriate. We like had immediate chemistry. And one day he was just like, I was like, hey, I'm doing a show at a comedy club. Do you want to come? And he goes, yeah, sure. It's a Friday night. It's a packed house. I'm the opening act, and then I forget who was the headliner. So I go up, and I'm like crushing it, like murdering the room. And I see him while I'm on stage. I make eye contact with him, and he's like literally looking around, like in shock. Like, he's not even laughing. He's in shock that what am I doing? So I get off stage, and I was like, did you have a good time? And he was like, Yeah. I had a good time. He looked like as if some man had put his dick in his face or something like that. Like this utter, like, oh my God, like he's like suffocating. And not soon after that, he just broke it off with me, just out of the blue. He couldn't take it.
Really?
He couldn't process it. It was too much for his nervous system. Well,
so he broke it off after he'd seen your act.
That's correct. And you know what he told me? You know what he told me? He was like, he told me, he's like, I can't introduce you to my mother. I was like, you can't introduce me to your mother because first of all, she's in Turkey. And second, she doesn't speak fucking English. So those two are, he's like, well, if she ever sees you perform comedy, I was like, she's not going to know what the fuck I'm saying because she doesn't speak English. So what the hell are you talking about?
No.
I was like, don't make it about your mother. It's about you. And that's the sort of thing that I come across. Where
I find that really disturbing when they bring their mother into it. Because, you know, you're not going to be sleeping with his mother, hopefully. And, you know, it's like, what's his mother got to do with it? There's not 3 people in that marriage. And, you know, if you're still talking about your mother when you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, there's something wrong with
you. With you, 100%.
You don't know who you are if you're bringing your mother into this. And you don't want to marry somebody who doesn't know who they are.
That's correct. That's correct.
But I've had the similar experiences. I met this one guy and he said to me, look, I know who you are. I've seen you on TV. I know who you are. I've seen you on TV. Oh. Look, when we get married, you will give up the comedy, right? And I said, this was the first date. When we get married, you'll give up the comedy, right? I said, no, I'm never giving up the comedy. And he said, well, you're really lucky that I asked you out on a date because, you know, you're a comedian, you're a second-class citizen, really. And nobody else is going to give you this chance. You're lucky that I turned up tonight. And then he proceeded to say to me that he was looking for a second wife. And would I be interested in being his second wife? Not even first wife, second wife. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, I need 2 wives. And I said, why? He said, because I have a high sex drive. I need 1 wife with me when I'm traveling for work. And 1 wife for when I get home.
No. Chester, how are you sitting through this date? How are you not throwing a glass of water in his face? Like, how are you so patient?
I was sitting there recording everything he said because I knew I was going to use this as material. This was my new show. And so I was patient and I was taking it, but I was like, He was very educated. He was very rich. He was only 50.
Wow.
And I was just...
Oh, Sufi man? Muslim man? What?
Yeah, he was a Muslim man. And he had one wife, and he wanted another one. He said to me, I'm entitled to do that. I'm a man.
Sorry. So how did the date end? Was it a coffee date, dinner date? What is this?
Well, I saw him about 8-9 times because I wanted the material. It actually got worse.
I love you.
It got worse. He was a misogynist. He was anti-Semitic. He was racist. I mean, he was everything. He was the worst human being I'd ever met in my life. But I carried on seeing him for the material. Also, it made me realize this is not what I want to do.
Yes. He is everything that is a nightmare.
Yeah.
This He's is like not a nightmare come alive. Wow. Wow.
So I couldn't believe that such a person existed.
Oh, no, they exist. They exist.
Yeah. You
know, so in America, what we have, and I think you guys have that too, because I've come across a few of your Muslim male comics in England who are... on the surface appear to be very progressive and very liberal. When you dig a little bit deeper or you talk to them and you're like, oh, you're just a misogynistic cunt. Oh, yeah, okay, awesome. So you're just pretending because you have to survive in the West. You have to, you know, look good so you don't get called out for being racist or anti-Semite or misogynistic. So you're just like, oh yeah, I'm all about women's rights and this and that. And they're always liberal when it comes to like white female comics or non-Muslim comics, non-Muslim people, but everybody else, but when it comes to dealing with their own, they're very, very misogynist.
I mean, everybody's shocked about Trump, the way he talks about women, the way he treats women, the way he views women. Everyone says he's such a misogynist.
Yeah.
And he is all of those things. Yeah. And everybody's really shocked because, you know, they've seen him on the world stage now. He does this on a daily basis.
Yes.
But, you know, culturally, we've seen men like this all the time.
Exactly. We grew up with men like this.
He's just the white version of these men.
That's correct.
And so, I mean, it is shocking because he's the president, so he should look better. Or you'd think you'd hide it. You'd hide it for the times you are facing the world. Just hide it a bit. He doesn't hide it. But you know, there's millions of Trumps out there.
That's correct. And by the way, and it's not even a particular culture thing. This is a global thing.
Yeah.
There are Trumps in every culture.
I think there's also been a backlash against feminism as well recently.
Yes.
You know, these strong women in the media coming out, campaigning against women's bodies and women's rights. And I think there's been a backlash by men against this kind of protest movement.
Yes.
They've got away with it. They've got away with it for so long.
That's right.
And now they're like, why don't you just shut up? Know your place. Stay in your lane kind of thing. And they're finding it hard to deal with that now.
Yes.
Whereas this is the first time women have had a moment.
That's correct.
This is our moment. How long have we waited for this?
That's right.
How long have we suffered for
centuries.
This?
Centuries.
And you know, Weinstein, you know, he gets locked up. And now, I mean, it's like, he's locked up now and nobody's even talking about it anymore, about how awful he was.
That's right.
It's like coronavirus, I know it's taken over. And I know he had coronavirus when he first went into prison. But, you know, I hope that he doesn't get out early. I really want him to kind of do his time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I feel like powerful men have been getting away with murder. I mean, look at MBS of Saudi Arabia with the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Yeah, I mean, all these like powerful men have been getting away with it. Do you think, and I know this is a bit of a hot button topic, do you think that, the misogyny in the West is still a little less than the misogyny in the Middle East and South Asia?
Oh, yeah. Because in the West, in a way, it's a choice. It's a choice for men to be misogynistic. Mm-hmm. They choose to dislike women. They choose to hate women, not give women jobs, make women's lives difficult, not hear their stories, accuse them of lying. And that is a choice. I mean, in our culture, they justify their behavior by saying, well, it says in the Quran.
That's right. It says
in the Quran, I can have four wives. It says in the Quran, I can beat my wife. Yes. It says in the Quran, you know, I can force my wife to have sex.
That's right.
So they use the Quran as a justification for their behavior, whereas in the West, they don't have any justification. It is just their choice.
That's correct. I mean, it's also the, which I always say that I feel like a lot of nations that are predominantly Muslim suffer politically and like struggle culturally as far as, you know, when it comes to political stability, when it comes to economic growth, when it comes to, you know, gender equality in their societies, is because there is so much mixing of church and state. And it really fucks them over because everything is driven by religion. You know, it's not just the Republic of Pakistan. It's the Islamic Republic of Pakistan. Well, Pakistan also has Christians. Pakistan also has Sikhs. Pakistan also has Hindus. What about the representation of those minorities? Why does it have to be predominantly always led by religion? And I think that's one of my biggest beefs. Yeah. When it comes to, you know, Muslim nations of constantly leading with religion. It's like, why do we always have to be that way?
But when you have kind of, when you have the flag of religion behind you to justify your behavior, it really does allow people to do the worst things in humanity, to kill people, to rape women, because you are so justified by what apparently it says in the Quran, which we all know is open to interpretation. And you can interpret that any way you want. And if you are a good person, you will interpret it in the right way. But men, often, when it comes to women, they like to interpret it in the way to benefit themselves.
That's correct.
Which is never in the woman's favor, obviously, and the woman suffers. And so we're constantly struggling against that group of people that use religion. To benefit themselves.
Because it's always about power, right? I feel like now women for the first time in history have their own money. We don't have to get married to have own property. We are in this position of power, and not just in the West. Now that's happening in the East, that's happening in the Middle East, it's happening in South Asia. I mean, the divorce rate has spiked in Pakistan. I don't know if you've heard, but Pakistan has been having a spike in divorces, mainly because women are joining the workforce. They're educated, they're taking charge of their lives, they're not putting up with bullshit. I think that now I feel like we are in this like gender war. There is this gender war that is happening. There is a struggle of power where men are having a hard time accepting the fact that women are rising in power and that they also have a say. They also have money. They also have properties. Do you, I mean, look, you've been to the US, you grew up in England. Do you feel like the Muslim communities in England are a lot more conservative than the Muslim communities in the US?
Yeah, I mean, because in America, people become Americanized and they're very proud to be American. Mm. And they say that they are an American first, Muslim second often. Mm. In England, it's a very small country. There's only like, we don't have half the population that America has. It's very small. People kind of ghettoize and live in their communities up north. And they don't really progress in the way that Americans have. Americans have a much stronger culture, and entertainment industry, and you know, people are they integrate into American culture really well, a lot more than, say, Pakistanis in British culture.
Yeah,
and they tend to marry.
Why do you think that is?
Well, they tend to marry each other here. The Pakistanis tend to marry Pakistanis.
Hmm.
And it's a very close community. Whereas, you know what, I mean, Pakistanis and Indians, they come to America, they marry Americans or they marry other cultures, Hispanic, Puerto Rican, Mexican,
That's right. Listen, I have four older brothers. I'm the youngest and the only girl. All my brothers married non-Muslims, non-Pakistanis, all of them. No, none of them married Pakistanis. None of them married Muslim. One married Filipino. One married a white British girl. One married an Austrian American girl. The fourth one's single. He's probably gonna end up marrying a white girl. And God knows who the fuck I'm gonna marry. I don't even know. I'm gonna marry like a mix of everything. Cause I love I love halfies. I love people who are like multi.
Yeah.
I'm a big
fan. They're the best looking people.
Yeah, exactly. This is the multicultural, just like a melting pot. You were talking about that you've been doing a lot of online shows. How I mean, it's not the same, right? For us, it's not the same. Comedy club at all. But do you feel like this is a good time as a comic for you to like write new stuff and just kind of churn some new stuff out and test some new stuff out?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. Like, comedians are observers. You know, we stand on the outside of life and we look in and we tell people how we see the world. Mm. And it's so different. It's for us. This is a great time because there's so much to talk about. You know, the governments are lying to us.
Yeah.
Is coronavirus a conspiracy? You know, not being able to see people. You know, being locked up in your house.
Yeah.
I mean, there is so much that you could talk about, you know, just having to dress up for Zoom calls. This is an ordeal. Never have we valued the hairdresser or the nail or the mani-pedi woman more than we have valued her now. All these kind of care workers. We talk to these people. Your nails look great.
The nail salon's open. I got my press-ons. Because I'm just trying to be like,
never have we valued these people more than we value them now.
Agreed.
And before, I think a lot of people took these people for granted, but now we realize how important these people are.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And there's so much to talk about, you know, like comedy, seriously, comedy is going to be dead for about a year now.
Like, you mean live comedy?
Like live stand-up and kind of gathering of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's gonna take a long time for it to go back.
You know, it's interesting you said that. We are now in the phase 3 opening in Los Angeles. So come July 4th, we're pretty much going back to normal. I feel like in LA, people are like so desperate to go out for live entertainment. So that remains to be seen how it's going to be. Do you think in London, I mean, you guys have a fantastic comedy scene. Next to New York, I think I would say London has the best comedy scene. Like, do you think it's going to take a long time for you guys? Like, where are you guys in your reopening phase?
Well, as you know, we have a liar as a prime minister. He lies constantly.
Oh, that's two of us.
He lies. Well, he nearly died. I mean, this guy nearly died a few weeks ago. He was seriously in ICU. He was in a terrible way. But, you know, he lies on a daily basis. One minute we are opening, then we're closing. One minute we're staying in, then we're not staying in. One minute there's a virus. No, it's not that bad. I mean, it's like, wow. We don't really know what's happening, but he's saying that in about 2 weeks' time, you'll be able to go to the Garden Center.
Okay.
And we're like,
Garden Center. What's that?
Garden Center is where they sell plants.
Oh, okay. Like a nursery.
And like, we're like, nobody gives a shit about this. I mean,
let me get to a nail salon. Like, open up a nail salon.
When is the hairdresser open? Exactly. That's when lockdown is over, the hairdresser opens.
That's right.
I mean, what are people going to be doing? Shagging in the garden center? I mean, it's really crazy, but we don't know what's happening. I mean, some things are beginning to open, but it's not normal for sure.
I think if people want to shag, they find anywhere to shag, no?
Well, people have not been allowed, but I know people that have been driving some distance. Some distance. To get that happening, I tell you, things have been happening. People have been risking their life.
I swear to God, I have had Desi girlfriends call me up from the East Coast and they're like, girl, it is so bad. They're like, it's so bad. The thirst is so real. They're like, I'm willing to take anything at this point. I'm like, get on Tinder, get on it. I'm like, get on it. Start right swiping, you know.
Has Tinder been busy?
Tinder's been busy, yeah. Not gonna lie, I've been
and do you think these people that have been talking to each other are gonna hook up with each other?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Well, it's gonna be explosion.
I don't know what's happening with you guys, but in LA it's mandatory free testing. So we have like all these free tests where we're getting. So I've been tested for COVID twice and I came back negative twice. They did a swab on me. They did a mouth swab. Oh, yeah. I'm just like, I am good. I got my report here that I'm negative. Let's do this. I was like, so who
am I? Where did you have that?
We have like these drive-thrus. So you go online and you make an appointment. And then you go just get in your car. You don't even have really any human interaction. And you get in line. And I was like, we're done within 30 minutes.
Wow. We don't have that here. No. We've got nothing. We've got nothing. No. We just have the garden. We just have the garden centers.
Here, why don't you go to the garden and stare at the fucking plants? There you go. There you go. Like, rub one out to the rose. Like,
I know. I know.
Reminds you of a vagina at some point. Like, Jesus fucking Christ. How sad is this? Speaking of comedy, Shazia, I've worked with you, and you know you've been so gracious to come on my shows, and you know and do stuff. You're always so wonderful to work with. I actually don't know much about your childhood and how you know you kind of got into comedy. Like you were born and raised in North London. Like where were you born? Or Birmingham?
I was born in Birmingham.
Okay.
Which is like 2 hours from London. Yeah. But my parents still live there.
Yeah.
And I was just brought up there, and then I went to university in Manchester, and then I went to London. And when I got to London, that's when I started doing comedy, when I got to London.
What did you go to school for?
Oh. I did biochemistry, like a good Muslim girl.
Because you were going to become a pharmacist?
Well, you know what, they wanted me to be a doctor, obviously.
Of course.
Because if you're a doctor, that means you have a good chance of getting a good husband.
That's the ultimate, baby.
And it's all about that, the husband. And you know what, I hated it. Yeah. I didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
I just used to chase boys around the laboratory. I just didn't do anything. I passed and that was it. But I never wanted to do that. I always wanted to be on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Are you an only child or do you have siblings?
No, there's five of us.
It is?
Oh. Three brothers and I have one sister.
And what number are you?
I'm number two.
Wow, you're five like we are. Well, your parents were busy like my parents, huh?
And you know what? Like that, when you talk to people these days, they go, wow, five. Like it's such a lot. It's such a lot. To these days when people only have like one or two.
Yes.
Like five seems such a lot to people when they say, wow, you're from such a big family.
Yeah. I mean, how did you even like get it? So you finish biochemistry and then what? You get a job doing this and then you end up in London? Like how did that even come about?
I decided I'm going to never go home again. I don't want to get married. I want to go to university. I went to, did a master's at Goldsmiths in London. And I became a teacher. And while I was teaching, I started doing stand-up comedy. And that's where I started. And it took off. And then I just carried on.
Wow. What grade were you teaching? Like, what level?
I was teaching, like, 16-year-old boys in the East End of London.
Wow.
So it was rough.
Yeah, I bet.
But I got a lot of material.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was a good experience to be a stand-up, to be a strong person standing up in front of a room full of people.
Did you have a friend who encouraged you to become a stand-up, or you were just like, you know what, this is a lot of
time. I know. I thought, I'm going to do this. I love comedy. I'm just going to go and give it a go. And it didn't really bother me that everyone was like a white guy. I just thought I can do this.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me at all.
Yeah.
I was really confident.
Yeah.
Or deluded. Yeah. Deluded. You have to be deluded, I think.
I think so too. You have to be a little bit off to do this.
Yeah.
There's no.
Yeah,
yeah. You cannot come. I was just talking to somebody about this. I was like, you can't come from a healthy family or a healthy background and do this. There's no need for it.
No. Stand-up comedy is the ultimate attention-seeking act.
Yes.
And there has to have something happened in your life to make you want to do this.
So what
because
has
it's
been your
not.
Life, yeah.
It's not normal.
What do you think happened in somewhere in your childhood that kind of brought you to this place to be like, you know what?
I think I wanted attention. I wanted people to listen to me. I wanted people to look at me. I wanted people to hear what I was saying. And I don't think I had that in my life growing up.
Not at home. Was it because you were like a middle child, or was it because you're a woman, or both?
No, I think it's because I was a girl. For sure.
Interesting. Yeah. So your brothers were treated differently than you were.
Oh, yeah. They had a voice. They could do what they wanted. They could say what they wanted. And they had a lot more liberation and power than me as a girl. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I had the same thing. Like, you know, I have four older brothers. I don't know. Like you said that they had a lot of, in my family, there was just a lot of trauma. There was a lot of, what are you smiling at?
Trauma. I think that's a main reason for people becoming a comedian. There's been something traumatic in their life.
Yeah. In my family, there's just like, okay, so I was recently writing down all my traumas because what am I going to do with my life during, and these, this is just a list.
Oh my God, that's a lot of trauma.
Yeah, that's a lot of trauma. that's a lot of trauma. My parents would bicker and fight. My dad used to beat the shit out of my mother in Pakistan. My dad used to beat the shit out of me till I was 15. Literally 2 months before I moved to the U.S., my father beat me so hard my earrings came out of my ears. My dad, when I started therapy, I remember my therapist asking me, like, what's your earliest memory? And I said, my earliest memory is my dad grabbing my mom by her hair and bashing it on the wall. They were like, that's your earliest memory? I was like, yeah, that's my earliest memory.
And how old were you when that was happening?
I must have been like 4 or 5 years old.
And you remember that?
I remember that. I remember all of that. Yeah. It's funny because I talked to my brother, my third oldest brother. So I don't have the best of relationships with my brothers, my other brothers, but my third oldest brother is the one I'm really close to, because when I moved to the US, you know, and this goes back to the original conversation we were having up top on the episode about misogyny and how, you know, how it's allowed and accepted and, you know, that it's normal. When I moved out to the US and my parents lived in Pakistan, I lived here with my four older brothers. And when I moved at 15, my brother told me very explicitly, he said, just so you know, you were sent here to cook and clean for us. Don't get any ideas, okay? And I, you know, a bulb started to go off in my head and I was like, I gotta get the fuck out of here. And then on multiple occasions, my brothers would take turns beating the shit out of me and I would have to call the cops on my brothers. So it's just been like this uphill battle of just trying to be heard and just trying to be a person. And not being like crushed down to because I'm a girl. So I feel like whenever I hear about, like, you know, like incidents like yours, you know, like a guy's like, I want a second wife. Like, you're so calm about it. I would have probably taken a butter knife and like stabbed him in the face or something.
Well, you know, you have experienced a lot of Pakistani women or women from our culture experience.
That's right. That's right.
And a lot of them, you have been able to fight against that and you have been able to overcome it.
Yes.
And you are able to live your life as you want, as you are doing.
Yeah.
But most women don't have your tenacity or your fight, and they just accept their situation and they do just get married and to whoever their parents have told them to marry, or a forced marriage, and they carry on living a subdued life.
Yes.
I mean, it takes a lot of courage and strength to say, I'm not going to live like this. I'm going to overcome this and I'm going to have a better life. So, you know, I mean, it is difficult
for women to... I agree with you.
Especially if you have nobody on your side.
Nobody. I had no one. Like, nothing. I'm like new to America. I move at 15 and at 18, I pack up my bags and I left. And I was like, halas, I'm done. I don't fucking care if I just sleep on the streets. I'll fucking figure it out. Fuck off. And my family was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was like, fuck you guys. Fuck you. I'm fucking out. I'm done with you guys. You don't fucking protect me. You're my primary caregivers. This is how you fucking treat me. Fuck off. And I think maybe for me, because I grew up with boys, I had a very like a male way of thinking that I'm just like, I'll figure it out. I'm a tough chick. I'm tough because I've been taking all these beatings. I'm tough. I can deal with this. You know, and it's taken me a long time. Like, look, I've been in therapy for like 13 some odd years and it's taken me a long time. And I continue to go to therapy because it is a lot of trauma to process, because I see how it shows up in my life every day. I see how sometimes I get triggered by stuff I don't understand. And then I have to go back to my therapist and talk about it. I'm like, I don't understand why I'm triggered by this. And they're like, oh, you triggered by this because of X, Y, and Z. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So then I have to bring it to my forefront and to my awareness level so I'm not triggered by it, where I'm not like constantly just reacting and not knowing why the fuck I'm reacting to this. You know, that's why I think when I, especially in the comedy world, when I come across, especially Desi men or Muslim men, and they try to be misogynistic with me towards me, I just see red sometimes, you know, because it's too close to home for me, you know? Do you experience that, like, sometimes? Is that something true for
you? I think it's really sad to say, but that violence is part of our culture.
Yes.
You know, I know so many women that have been, like, beaten by their fathers and their brothers, and it was kind of for a long time accepted that this is just the culture. This is how men behave towards women. And also, because a lot of men say, you know, it says in the Quran, I can hit my wife.
That's not true at all.
I can beat my wife. It says that. And for many years, it was just accepted that this is how it is.
Yes.
It's only in a kind of now in our culture where women have a voice and women are saying, this is not acceptable. Doesn't matter what culture you come from, this is not acceptable. It's only in recent times, like in the past 20 years, that this has not been acceptable. I mean, up till this point, I know so many kind of Indian, Pakistani women that were beaten by their husbands and, you yes. know, by their brothers and forced yes. marriages and held hostage. And, you know, it was so common. And yes. I think white people were scared to intervene because they said, you know what, this is a cultural issue yes. and we don't want to get involved. Yes. But really, so I think that our women had nobody to turn to.
That's right.
No one to help them. And people were scared to help.
Yes, right.
People were scared to speak up. Okay. And I really envy white women because they have such a network going on,
yeah.
especially with the Me Too movement,
yes.
which was actually started by a black woman. But the white women have such a movement and such a voice
mm-hmm.
where they are helping each other. And like, look, Harvey Weinstein has been locked up. And that is because of the voice of white women. Whereas I don't think Pakistani women or Indian women have that same kind of
Not in the mass
voice behind
it. Yeah, but I feel like it's voices like yours. It's voices like mine. Like now, we are the first generation to speak out and to talk about it in public and air things, you know, even personal, deeply personal stuff in a way that no generation before us had been able to do that. I mean, they would be mocked and they would be demeaned or they would be dismissed to be like, you're lying or it's just in your head. And look, my family is not very pleased when I talk about this in public, of course, because they feel like somehow I'm bringing shame upon the family. But the truth is they brought shame upon themselves by treating me this way, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the woman always gets the blame, regardless of what happens. The woman is always to blame. And I think it takes a lot of accumulative voices to say,
yes.
hang on,
yes.
don't make, it's not the woman's fault. The woman is not guilty. The woman didn't ask to get beaten or raped or forced into a marriage. You did that.
That's correct.
Don't put it on the woman. And white women are way further along the line than yes. Indian and Pakistani women in not getting the blame.
Also because they don't have the dagger of religion hanging on them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the dagger of religion is a real powerful tool.
And the shame, like, you know, if you say, I don't want to marry a Pakistani man, I want to marry a Puerto Rican, a Mexican guy. The kind of shame and the burden you have to carry
that
you did something different.
That's right.
That you married out.
That's right.
That you did your own thing.
That's
like,
right.
If even from people you don't know judging you for what you did, I mean, you know, you could be a 40, 50-year-old woman and you'd still get that judgment now. And I just think it's so crazy. I just feel like white women, they don't have that.
That's right. That's right. I feel like, you know, I don't know if you know the stat here, but every day, 3 women die at the hands of their lovers or their boyfriends in America.
And over here. And here too. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, we're still talking about a major issue. Like, there shouldn't be 3 women at an average dying every day. And these are not, you know, I don't know, you know, what ethnicities women are, but these are like American women. So they're probably predominantly white. You know, there was this guy here by the name of, I think he was like something Wattsy, the Watts family. This guy's wife was pregnant with the second or the third child. And this guy just like snapped one day. He was having extramarital affairs with another man. Did not want to come out of the closet, did not want to talk about it, and then just woke up one day and was just like, I'm going to kill my entire family. Killed his pregnant wife, killed the child, and the only person who discovered is this woman in the neighborhood who saw that there was something off about him, that he was just like going about his life like nothing. He murdered them and then just went about his life like not a big deal. So this is the kind of shit, like, you're not going to hear women like murdering their entire fucking families. And the craziest thing is that women go through so much trauma and we still choose not to pick up the gun and shoot up the whole fucking family. Okay? So
I think women have some kind of empathy, sympathy, thought process about other people other than themselves. Because yeah. as women, we've always had to think about other people.
That's correct.
From the day that we're born, if we're not thinking about our parents, if we're not giving birth, if we're not looking after the elderly, you know, there is always something that women have to take care of other than themselves.
That's correct.
Whereas for a lot of men, they don't have to do that. They just have to look after themselves.
That's correct.
So for women, for a woman to go in and murder an entire family, you know, there's no kind of female equivalent of Ted Bundy, you know?
There was just Ted Bundy.
Serial
killers are predominantly men.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was Eileen Wuornos, but she was an abused woman.
That's correct.
And she was abused, and that's why she abused other men, because they abused her all her life, and she was just trying to get payback. I mean, nobody abused Ted Bundy. He just went on a rampage killing women.
That's correct. That's correct.
And there's so many of these men. I think, you know, that is an extreme case, Ted Bundy and these serial killers. But there's a lot of men who just don't like women.
That's right.
They just don't like them. They are misogynists on a daily basis. That's people correct. Like Trump, they don't like women.
That's right.
Someone like Ted Bundy hates women and kills them. But they're on a lesser level, there are men who just don't like them, treat them badly.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. But you know what, like you know what the interesting thing about that is? Like, if you watch Ted Bundy's documentary or any of these serial killers, so I'm a big, I love watching the serial killer stories.
I think women do. I know so, most women I know love watching serial killer.
You know why I love watching it? I'll tell you why I love watching it. Because every time I watch it, there's always this one thing they talk about. He was so good looking. He was so charming.
Yeah,
oh, and he had really messed up. His mother was really messed up. It's always, they always bring it back to the woman. It's
or that they had a girlfriend once.
Or they had a girlfriend. Them. Yeah, exactly.
That treated them really badly. And now they just treat all women badly.
Yeah.
That was what I found fascinating about. I was watching a Ted Bundy documentary the other night. I watched the Ted Bundy tapes on Netflix.
Mm.
But I've watched another documentary where his first girlfriend was a girl in her 20s who had long dark hair, and she treated him badly and he was really hurt by it. And as a consequence, all the women he murdered after that all had long dark hair, parted down the middle. That was his victim, what she looked like.
Right. And you know, and then it's justified. It's like, well, you know, the girl broke his heart. So that's why he's like going on a killing spree. And it's like, fuck off. You know how many men women get abused by? Okay. Like women every day? We don't fucking go on a killing spree. We should. We have every right and every excuse to go on a killing spree. But we fucking choose not to. You know?
Yeah. I think
Desi women, Muslim women.
I think women, though, are very good at talking to other women about how they feel.
Yeah,
and these men, like Ted Bundy, they store up all of their hatred towards women, and they never talk about it, and they just store it up, and then they look at pictures, and they hate these women, and then they just go and murder them.
Yes.
Whereas women are way better at communicating and saying how they feel about things.
Do you feel like this toxic masculinity that we talk about, and you know, again, we'll go back to the Middle Eastern, South Asian, and the Muslim communities, where in the West, at least, you know, you have therapy, and there's a lot more now talk of like, hey, boys should be allowed to cry. Like, let the boy cry. He's a fucking human being. Oh, boys don't cry. No, boys should cry. We need more boys that cry. Do you feel like that mentality has suffocated the mentality of the men to create the toxic masculinity that we have? Because men are told to be like, man up, don't express your feelings. What are you, a girl?
Yeah.
What are you?
Yeah, absolutely. And you have these men that describe themselves as alpha males.
Mm.
I'm an alpha male. Why are you calling yourself that? Women don't go around saying I'm an alpha female. I'm an alpha female.
Yeah.
I'm an alpha male. They label themselves as a man. I'm a man's man. What does that mean? I'm a man's man. Like, why are you labeling yourself as I'm a man? I'm an alpha male.
That sounds pretty gay to me. When somebody's like a man's man, I'm like, oh, you're a man's man?
Man. It's like, why are you having to prove yourself as a man?
Yes.
I know you. I can see you're a man. Why are you labeling yourself as that?
Yes. Yes. I think the fact that they're not allowed to express themselves, or they're just kind of suffocated, like, oh, just be a man. Don't show any feelings. Shove it down. Like, don't express that. You're, you know, what's the girl?
So then what are they doing behind closed doors when they are depressed or upset?
Whacking off? I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
I remember watching this documentary once. It was Cynthia Payne. She was a very famous madam in England. She used to run whorehouses, brothels. She's very famous. She's dead now. And she, I remember watching a documentary once, and she said, if a man is violent, it is because he is sexually repressed.
Wow. Wow.
And I remember thinking, that's really interesting. She said, every bit of sexual repression in a man will manifest as violence because they don't know how else to express themselves. And I think about our culture, where we are not allowed to talk about sex. We're not allowed to do it. Nobody's doing it, apparently. When you're growing up, you're not allowed to have girlfriends and boyfriends. And for a guy not to be able to express himself in that way, yeah, of course it's going to come out as violence. Of course he's going to beat his wife and his kids.
That's right.
And I think that is so true, particularly in our culture.
That's right. When do you think this ends? When does the shift happen? I'm sure the shift is going to happen in small increments, and I think it is happening. But when do you think we, in our culture, it eventually begins to take that kind of turn where you're like, okay, everyone needs to chill the fuck out. If people need to get laid, that's their personal business. That's nothing to do with the government. The people, you know, there's no moral authority that's going around, because in Iran, they have the moral police, right? They tell women to cover their arms up. Yeah. They tell if a guy's wearing shorts. I just learned about through a Persian friend who was hanging out with yesterday. She told me, she was like, oh yeah. She was like, they make the guy stand up to make sure that the shirts are long enough so their ass crack is not showing. Like, moral police. Like, first of all, go fuck yourself. What makes you the fucking moral police? And second, like, when do you think that tide begins to turn? Like, when does that happen?
I mean, there has to be evolution. I mean, in the white world, this is happening with Me Too.
Yes.
Me Too, men are getting arrested. This is not acceptable behavior. Woody Allen's book didn't get published. You know, Harvey Weinstein got arrested. Louis C.K. Can't do stand-up anymore. This is progress in a way that these men are being held accounted for what they did.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, in our culture, they've been getting away with it for years and years, and nobody's held to account. Nobody, these guys have never been arrested for their crimes. They still think it's acceptable to rape their wife. Yes. And I think until there is things start happening, things have got to happen. People have got to get arrested. People have got to lose their jobs in order for there to be progress and say, you know, we're not going to stand for this anymore. I think that has to happen in our culture. I mean, it's happening in India a bit.
Yes.
With the Delhi, remember when the Delhi rapes happened?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
People started protesting. And now, I was in India last year, and in Delhi, on the tubes there, on the transport, they have a women-only section now, where just women can sit safely. You know, so like, that kind of thing is progress.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to have that in Pakistani culture, in Muslim culture, in Saudi. You know, we need to have that happening.
Don't you think we need allies for that? I think in India, that's happening because the other men are standing up and they're like, I don't want this happening to my mother, my sister, my wife, my girlfriend. Like, I don't want this happening to them. So I'm going to stand up against it. Don't you think we need allies? And why aren't we having allies in Pakistan? Why aren't more men speaking out?
Because men have enjoyed their power. For centuries, they love their power. It's all in their favor.
Yeah.
Why would they want to give that up? You know, it's all in their favor. The financial freedom, sexual freedom. You know, they have everything.
Do they have the sexual freedom though? We just talked about how you can't have a girlfriend.
Well, they go to Dubai and they sleep with prostitutes. I mean,
listen,
women
if you're a poor guy, if you're a poor man who can't afford to go to Dubai, what do you do?
You rape women.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, listen, like in the main cities, things still come to the surface and, you know, it's talked about in the news. But if you're in like small villages, like these girls are just told to be ashamed of getting raped when it's the guy who did that to them, and the guy goes unpunished, and the women are getting are bearing all the brunt of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like Shazia, we need to create like a Gulabi gang. Do you know Gulabi gang?
Also, like if you become really famous, like Oprah Winfrey, she's amazing because as a black woman, you know, coming from Mississippi, in the deep South, you know, getting pregnant when she was 12, sexually abused, you know, coming from the family and the background and being very poor. And she manages somehow to become the world's first black female billionaire.
Yes.
She's running America. She is the most powerful woman in the world.
Yes.
And she has, because of that, because of who she is, she has been able to change the world.
Yes.
I mean, she also used her power and her fame and her money in a very positive way.
Yes.
But, you know, I think sometimes you need that fame to give you power in order to make a change.
Agreed.
And if we were to be, you know, famous on that scale now, you know, I would hope and I would I think that we would use our fame in our way to help women like us.
Agreed.
You know?
100%. I mean, I think everything that I do from my shows, everything that I do is about how do we empower our women? How do we give our people women platform? Like giving my people a platform, great, but mostly the women. How do I, like, how do I give them more platforms? How do we get more voices out there? And I think my entire purpose behind starting this podcast was to have these conversations, because these conversations need to be had, especially in our culture, especially coming from the faith that we come from, because everybody's so scared to talk about it. And I see the power that it has. I see the power of when I talk about my traumas and how it opens people up and how it empowers people, and not just people of our culture and background, but even white women that have experienced it, you know, that come forward. I did this show. So Jill Soloway, do you know who she is? Jill Soloway?
Yeah.
So Jill Soloway does this show at the Comedy Central stage, and you have to submit a story, and if they like it, then they invite you to come and tell your story, okay? So I wrote the story out about this one particular incident about my dad visiting a month before he passed away and me having a full-blown confrontation with him about all the shit that he had done in his life towards me and my mother. And it was like this big fight we had in an Italian restaurant in the middle of New York City on a hot summer day. Okay? Me and my dad just fucking going at each other, right? Like we're fucking going at each other, like verbal, not physical, but verbal. We're having a full-blown confrontation. So I used to be married, and I was married for like 9.5 years to this Greek-American man. So my Greek-American ex-husband is sitting there. My mom's sitting there, my dad's sitting there, and we are fucking going at each other, right? We're like at each other's throats. And coming from the culture that, first of all, girls don't speak up to their father, let alone fucking confront them about shit while drinking fucking white wine in front of them. Like, that's what the fuck is happening right now? And that's what the fight was about. My dad got really pissed off at me because I ordered white wine, and he asked me what kind of soda it was, and I said it wasn't soda, it was fucking alcohol. And my dad lost his shit on me, and we fucking had a full-blown fight. And I was like, fuck yeah, we're having a fucking fight, okay? Because he started talking to me about being halal and shit, and I was like, fuck off. You want to fucking talk about halal, bitch? Let's talk about halal then, you know? And I just fucking had a moment. Like, I just snapped. And I did this whole story. And Shazia, I have never seen this level of response from people. Like, the entire fucking room was waiting for me when I got off stage, when the show got done. Like women walking up to me with like tears in their eyes, like talking to me about their stories. And I was like, oh my God, this is like bigger than me. This is not even just about my story. This is about this collective conscience of like what's happening in the world and this shift that we are a part of. I want more stories like that. I want more women to stand up to their fucked up.
And that was funny. Amazing. It's funny, Amanda, because
thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. I will see you guys
you actually
next
made it funny
week.
There.
Don't forget to subscribe to our channel for my watch.
The way you told that was so funny. But I think every culture. I was the other week. I was watching Raging Bull with Robert De Niro.
Artists, change makers,
very old film.
You name it.
Where in Italian American
culture, thank you very much for tuning in.
You know, it shows him beating his wife. Shows him slapping his wife. How the wife was not allowed to talk. How the wife was not allowed to have a voice. She had to do what the husband said.
Yeah.
And how the man was very masculine and she was expected to be meek and feminine and quiet. And that is an old film, Raging Bull. It's like 1980. And, you know, it shows the violence, which is gruesome. But it's also part of Italian-American culture, Greek culture, Pakistani culture, Indian culture, Arab culture. It's a kind of universal thing that men want to control women and control their lives. So, you know, when you go on stage, however you are, however your background, and you tell this story, I mean, it won't just resonate with women that look like you.
That's correct.
It will resonate with all women.
That's correct.
You know, black women, white women, all types of women have suffered some kind of oppression.
That's correct.
You know, that is kind of the basis of being a woman. That you are born oppressed in some way.
Well,
it's just that some cultures we have it more than others.
Yes.
But I'm not surprised that a lot of women would come up to you afterwards and say, you know what, the same thing happened to me.
Yes, yes. I've never seen so many white women with tears in their eyes walking towards me like that. Like that's that was something that was really like people were like so beyond moved by it, and I was like, oh. And then the funny thing is that I sent that video to an executive at a studio, and then he responds to me like within a day, which I never really get responses from him that quickly. And he was like, thank you so much for telling this. So such a well-told story. My wife is going through the exact same thing with her father right now. What the fuck? This is an executive at a major fucking studio telling me this. Like, he didn't have to tell me this deeply personal thing about him. But yeah, I feel like that's the power of telling traumas, you know? When I put that story up, my mom sent me a message and she was like, can you take that link down? She told me. She was like, can you take that story down? I was like, mother, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been a grown-ass woman for a very fucking long time and I've eaten shit for a very long time. As much as I love you, but fuck no, I'm not fucking taking that link down and you just have to deal with it, you know? Because again, it goes back to the, oh, you're bringing shame upon the family. I'm not bringing shame upon the family. Family brought shame upon itself. That's not my fucking problem. I am the fucking voice that's going to fucking rise and talk about this shit because I don't want this happening and I don't want this shit. By the time I die and leave this planet, I want this shit reduced by at least fucking 50 to 90%. By the time I die in whatever time I fucking leave this planet, I don't want to leave this planet as I found it. I want to leave it better. I want women that are going to come after me to never experience the shit that this is going to be a fucking myth to them, that at once upon a time, women used to get treated this way, that they're never going to want to experience this. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how I feel about it. What about your sisters? Is everybody in your family married? Like what is that?
No. There's only my elder brother is married and my sister is married and the rest of us are not. Only two of them are married. And then, you know, my brother, he's got two kids, a boy and a girl. He married a Muslim girl and they live in Dubai and they've got a couple of kids.
Okay. Did you marry a Pakistani woman or?
Huh?
You married a Pakistani woman or?
Yeah. Married a Pakistani woman. He's the eldest. He married a Pakistani woman, did the right thing, got a couple of kids. You know that I will do what I want to do.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't think as a female comedian, you could have gone this far and lived this life and then go back and marry a Pakistani guy. You've been living your life on your own terms. You're a comedian.
That's right.
You therefore have to live that life in all areas. Like, do what you want to do. You came this far, you know?
What was it like for you? Like when were you like secretly doing stand-up comedy? And
it was a secret. It was in secret. I mean, it was never, you know, 15 years ago, I mean, it wasn't the scene that it is now. And,
you're
still only a few of us now.
Yes.
But then there was no one.
There was nobody.
And so I did it in secret for sure. And I thought, you know what, that's the best way. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want no judgment. I want to develop. And I got a lot of attention because I was the only one at that time. But yeah. I just wanted to do comedy. I love comedy.
I don't think it was just because it was just you. You were also really good. You have to be really good.
Well, I had a hard time, you know, because people expected so much of me.
Yes.
Because when you're the only one, it was like, can you explain terrorism? Can you explain 9/11? Can you explain suicide bombers? Why do your men do this? Why do your women do this? And you know, white comedians have the privilege to talk about whatever they want.
That's correct.
We have to be somehow talking about issues.
That's correct.
We have to have an explanation, a reason. Why is this happening? We don't have the privilege to talk about whatever we want. When I talk about white privilege in comedy, that is white privilege. When you have the voice to talk about and be funny about whatever you want, we have to answer questions. We are constantly on trial. We constantly have to answer questions, explain things, talk about things. It has to be meaningful. We don't have the opportunity to just be kind of Margaret Cho or Robin Williams. What a privilege that would be. That's why it's always harder for ethnic minority Canadians.
Yes, yes. You know, it's interesting. I've had Margaret on the show, you know, on the podcast, and Margaret's become a really good friend, and we've had some really in-depth conversations. You know, Margaret talks about her cultural struggles of what her family expecting of her, like she has to get married. And I asked her, I was like, Margaret, what was that like for you? You know, being in like Asian culture, being born, coming from the Korean culture, born and raised in San Francisco. She goes, and also being queer on top, like those are all different, you know, factors for her. And she was like, she's like, you know, I didn't have a female role model that I looked at and I was just like, oh, this is who I want to be like. She's like, every woman around me was just like married or just unhappy in a marriage, or, you know, it wasn't just something that I look up to. And I had this exact same conversation with them. I'm like, Margaret, do you think you have a lot more freedom to talk about things that I don't have freedom to talk about? And I was like, you can talk about sexual stuff and the things that you talk about. I don't, somehow when I go up and talk about it, I am frowned upon. I am looked at as a whore. I am called all kinds of names, or I'm being sexually demeaned. And not necessarily even by white comics. I'm mostly demeaned by fellow Desi comics or fellow Muslim male comics. This is a true story. Last year, so there was this documentary that was the short doc that was done on me about 2 years ago. The doc got accepted in this film festival in San Francisco. So they flew me out to San Fran for the premiere. And I came across this two Desi comics who I have known. One I know better than the other. Okay, one lives in San Francisco. The other one lives in New York. I am not very good friends with the one who live in New York. We're friends on Facebook, but we've never worked together or anything like that. And I've heard that he eats giant dicks on stage when he goes, because he never fucking kills. So this piece of shit walks up to me because he apparently also had a documentary that was showing. And he goes, walks up to me, he goes like, I don't know, you had a documentary that you was showing on this film festival? And I was like, yeah, I do. And I was like, don't you have one? He goes, yeah, I do, you know? And I'm like, oh, that's cool. He goes, isn't the name of your documentary American Hussy? Hussy? Hussy means laughter, H-A-S-I. And he goes, no, it means whore, the way you are. To my face. This is a trash human being.
Wow.
No, I have no interaction with them. There's no bond. There's no friendship. We're not cool. We're not homies. Like, nothing. And the audacity to walk up to me and call me a whore to my face when we've never even fucked. I would never fuck you because you're probably dickless.
Wow.
So this is the kind of shit that I have come across, where it's like, wow, have you experienced shit like this?
Oh my God. You know what? I mean, I was listening to, I've listened to a lot of Margaret Cho. She does talk about her struggle as a Korean woman and how she had no role models. Just like, really, we didn't have any role models in comedy when we started. There was no woman to take us under her wing and say, listen, this is how you do it. This is what you do. This is what you don't do. And you're going to be all right. And just ignore. There was nobody to do that. You are on your own.
Yes.
And it's so funny. You know what? I'm obsessed with Tyler Henry. I think Tyler Henry is just really incredible. Yeah. And Margaret Cho was on, I was watching it last night. Margaret Cho was on Tyler Henry other night. And Tyler Henry said, I feel Robin Williams coming through.
Oh, wow. Wow. Wow.
And I was like, oh my God. And even Margaret Cho went, really?
Oh my God. Margaret is so great.
She's amazing. But, you know, every woman that is a Margaret Cho, you have to hear her story.
Yes.
This is what I went through. This is the struggle. You know, they wanted her to be thin. They wanted her to be pretty. Yes. And you know, in comedy, people do treat you a particular way. This guy treating you the way he did, he obviously looks at you and makes a judgment about you.
Yes.
And says, oh, well, you know what, you're wearing that or you look like that, you must be a hoe.
Yes.
And that is deep, intrinsic misogyny, which is actually very dangerous and disturbing. But the thing is, there are a lot of men like that. He just verbalized what he thought. There's a lot of men that would think that and would never say it. But he actually was brave enough or not to give a shit about to say that.
That's right.
And the thing is, in comedy, you get that. I mean, look what Louis C.K. did, you know, to those women. I mean, that is misogyny.
That's correct.
And just because somebody is a comedian, it doesn't mean they are exempt from having these kind of thoughts and...
As a matter of fact, I don't know what it's like in the London comedy scene, but in the US comedy scene, they try to pass it off as like, ha ha, it's a joke. Russell Peters, when I met him, I've been talking about him on iHeartRadio and all that because I don't give a fuck. But Russell Peters, the first time I met him, of course, we were fans. Like, he was the first Desi comic that made it big. Like, holy shit, it's fucking Russell Peters. And I remember meeting him at the Hollywood Improv and being like, I went to watch him and he was standing outside. We had a really good interaction. And then after that, it got a little weird because he thought I was some kind of a groupie. And I was like, I'm not a groupie, I'm a stand-up comic. And he was like, oh, okay. And then a year later, I'm doing a show at the Comedy Store and in walks Russell Peters hosting the show. And I was like, oh, this is going to get a little awkward. So he goes up on stage and he goes, the next comic I'm about to bring up on stage, I've been trying to fuck her ever since I met her. Give it up for Mona Shake, right? So I think for me, it's because I come across like glammed out or well put together, or I'm like mildly attractive, that the guys feel very compelled to be like, ooh, she must be a whore. She must be like, you know, sleeping with all these.
But really, is that a license? Is that?
Yeah, they feel entitled. Yeah, they feel entitled to have a license.
I also think, you know, it's really about power.
Yes.
It's really about power. And like all abuse towards women is about power. Rape is about power.
Yes.
Domestic violence is about power.
Yes.
And having a man say, you know, I've wanted to fuck her ever since I met her. It's a power thing. He's on stage with the microphone and everybody's looking at him.
Yes.
And he's saying, you know what? Oh God, I really fancy her. I wanted to fuck her. And he's got the audience on his side before they've even seen you. That's and right. It's like, I have the upper hand here. I'm saying this before I introduce her.
That's right.
I'm in charge here. And it's total power thing.
Yes.
Because you have to then come on to that and be funny and win the crowd over.
That's
to
correct.
You.
That's
so
correct.
So in a way, what he's doing is he's putting you on a low level to start with.
That's exactly
and that is an absolute power thing.
That's
right. And that comes from being a weak man. If you have to do that to a woman, you're a weak man.
That's correct. I 100% agree with you. You know, it's funny because, and I was still fairly new to comedy, and I remember going up on stage and being like, give it up for Russell Peters because I won't be anytime soon. And, you know, and then the crowd started laughing and I was like, oh, Russell, I would totally fuck you, but only with a paper bag on your head. But, you know, and then the crowd like started laughing and I'm trying to get the crowd back on my side, but it's so fucked up. I have never seen a female comic, a stand-up female comic, go up on stage and try to put a guy in that position where he has to earn the crowd back or try to sexually like control him. I've just never seen it. Have you?
Well, I mean, I've seen male comics be very aggressive on stage.
Oh, yeah.
And also, you know what, when they're doing crowd work, kind of bantering with the women.
Yes.
And flirting with the women, which women, female comics cannot do in the same way.
That's correct.
We just can't, because we have to be respected.
Yes.
But, you know, men use their sexuality, and this is an old trick, you know, using their sexuality to get laughs, to get sex, to get women to like them. I mean, you know, we've all seen how many ugly male comics get fucked every night.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Oh, he made me laugh. Yeah, but look at his fucking face. I mean, really.
Yep,
that rule does not apply to us.
No, not in the slightest. Not in the slightest. You know, do you know Dom Herrera? You know Dom.
Yes. Yeah.
Dom's so great. I remember once I was sitting at the Laugh Factory, and we were sitting backstage, and this very big white male comic, who I'm not going to mention, was on stage. And all these guys were like, oh my God, he's so funny. And I just know that they're going to go talk to him backstage and, you know, he's going to try to fuck them or whatever he's going to do. And I remember turning to Dom and being like, Dom, do you think I'll ever get groupies? And he was like, you'll get groupies, Dom. Dom's like, you'll get groupies, Mona. I was like, I don't think so, Dom. I don't think groupies are in my stars, man. I'll never get groupies like that. Or like, oh my God, man, it's so funny. You know, I would never get that shit.
The thing is, we do get groupies.
Creepy Mona,
I tell you what groupies we get. We get old men in their 70s and 80s. You think that we are very brave and really respect what we do, and we're very brave. Well done, us. But they don't want to fuck us over the kitchen table. That they don't want to do.
Don't they need Viagra for it, Shazia?
Do guys still do that? Viagra and all that?
So much. Oh, this is a true story. My neighbor and I were talking, and he goes, oh, I ordered the Z-Pack from this Indian company. I think the Indian company is in India. And he goes, and he's like, whenever they send me my Z-Pack, do you know what a Z-Pack is?
No.
Z-Pack is what you take when you have a really bad cold or flu, and you take the Z-Pack and it just like knocks it right out of your system. It's very strong. I don't know if it's kind of a steroid, but it's very, very powerful. And he's like, every time I get my Z-Pack, they send me like complimentary Viagra. Send him complimentary Viagra. And he was telling me, he's like, one day I took it, I went to work, and then my coworker pulled me on the side and they're like, you have a massive erection right now. Are you okay? And he's like, oh fuck, I took Viagra and I forgot about it. Would we get that? Is there even a female Viagra? Do we even have
that? No, there isn't. There isn't a female Viagra. But you know what? Women have got other shit to do. We don't just spend 24 hours a day fucking. That's what guys do, even in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. Fucking. I mean, we've got cleaning to do. We've got books to read. We want to chat to other women. These guys just want to fuck till they die.
They do. I mean, look at, remember Anna Nicole Smith's husband, the 93-year-old guy?
Oh, come on. It wasn't a husband. I mean, this guy was a walking corpse.
He was. I mean, the fucking crypt keeper. The goddamn crypt keeper.
The oil baron, 90 years old. She is this young, voluptuous model. I mean, listen, I'm no psychic, but I don't think it was love.
You know, just a little bit. Like, I'm not a Mensa member at all. Like, but I would say... Maybe not love.
But was it even lust?
Lust? I don't know.
He was 90. So what did he enjoy about that experience?
Titties in his face? I don't know. Titties in his face, Shanzia. just
at 90. Foods. He was 90 something.
Yeah. Guys don't. Have you ever seen old creepy men checking out young women? They don't give a fuck.
But what makes me laugh is how they think they're still in with a chance.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. You think you are still in with a child. I mean, this is some confidence that can't be bought. This is a man's ego.
Man's ego, but it's also a cultural thing, right? It's like, oh, there's all this thing about, oh, a younger woman should marry an older guy because an older guy has his stuff together and he'll take care of her. No!
But women don't want that. Women don't need that these days because women have got their own stuff. I mean, what about this Catherine McPhee, who won the American Idol? And she's with a guy, she's 30-something. She's with a guy who's in his 70s, the music producer.
That's correct.
Who's been married three times before.
Yes.
And she said, and he got married to her, the fourth wife. She's 30-something. She's his fourth wife.
Yes.
And he said something stupid like, oh, this time it just feels right. And I just thought, fuck me, this is hilarious.
Yeah, it just feels...
You are 70 years old, you have four children, you've been married four times, and now it feels right? Really?
Yeah. I mean, listen, and guys have been given that luxury, right? To me, whenever I see a younger guy with an older woman, I'm like, run! I say to the older woman, run! He's gonna cheat on you! It never works out! Look, remember Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher? Whoever fucking thought that was gonna work out? I'm like, that's never gonna work out.
I mean, Kim Cattrall, Sex and the City. I mean...
Oh, I don't know her story. What about Kim Cattrall?
Well, in Sex and the City, she was dating a lot of younger guys.
That's right.
And she just got bored because
yes.
It was boring. There was nothing. They weren't great sexually. They had nothing to talk about. Yes. And she was showing them what to do. So she wasn't getting a good fuck out of it.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, I just want to get in a place where I can have my own male harem. It's about fucking time. We change that shit.
I think there are a lot of older women going out with younger men.
Yeah.
And if that's what they want to do, fine.
Yes.
But they have to be able to handle the older woman.
Right. Which they, I mean, like, even older guys can't handle older women, let alone younger guys.
Yeah.
Because it's always like, I'm still, this is a true story. When on a date with this guy, 50 years old, okay? I was like, okay, he looked pretty young. So I was like, how old are you? He's like 50. I was like, have you ever been married? No. Have you been engaged? No. Do you have kids? No. What's your longest relationship? 8 months. Let me understand this. You've been on the fucking planet for 50 years. Your longest relationship is 8 months. I was like, have you ever considered therapy? And he goes, it's like, what do I got to lose? Fuck it. We get some material out of this. And he was like, well, you know, I'm beginning to realize that there might be something off. I'm like, oh. Now, like 50 years on the planet, now you get into this. But so many guys are fucking delusional out there. Oh, I'm only 50. I'm so young. I can go out and get a younger girl. I'm so young.
He could. You know what? There'll be, if he's got money, he could get a 25-year-old.
Yes. Do you think that women need to start banding together to be like, we're not going to fuck older guys? Go find an age-appropriate woman.
Yeah, but you know what? There's something very sad about that man who is maybe 70 going out with a 25-year-old because in his heart he must know she doesn't love him.
Right.
In his heart he must know he doesn't love her or she doesn't love him.
His semi-functioning heart.
Yeah, she's probably only with him for the money, and he is desperately lonely.
Yes.
I mean, it's a sad situation for both people because, you know, he could die, she could be left with money, but then she'd be divorced and she'd have to find someone else.
Yes.
But he is lonely and he desperately probably does want somebody to love him.
Yes, agreed.
But But how, you know, it's very difficult for men as they get older to find that love again.
Yes.
That maybe they once had. And what I want to know is, why doesn't a 70-year-old guy go out with a 70-year-old woman?
Because I think that one of the things that I've always heard guys say is just like, the women in my age are just set in their ways. I'm like, well, so are you.
Yeah.
So are you. So you're looking for a woman to mold her, that she would be, that she would please you, that she would like cater to you. Because again, it goes back to women are supposed to cater to you and sacrifice to you, you know, because it's all about the male. It's all about the man. How do I please you? What can I do for you?
Is it also about, he just wants a younger body?
Yeah, he wants a younger body while the rest of his body is melting and falling apart. Yeah,
it's saggy. And you know what? If you're going to be with a 25-year-old woman, that 25-year-old woman has got to sleep with you.
Listen, I've been there, so I can't even judge people. I've been there.
Do you think it's possible that she could love him?
Maybe it's possible that she could love him. Maybe she's not in love with him. What she loves is the security. What she loves is the tenderness and the care that he provides. Maybe she loves the, not just the financial security, but also he maybe doesn't make her feel like garbage. She doesn't have to constantly be like, you know, be criticized. Oh, I'm getting fat. Am I getting this? He's just grateful that he has a younger person in his life, whatever she is. Like, he's just fucking grateful for that. So I think a lot of, you know, like a lot of guys that are our age or younger, they're so fucking immature. And it's accepted. Society's like, well, boys will be boys. Well, fuck that. No boys will be boys. Figure your shit out. And, you know, I think that's one of the conflicts that I come across in dating. I just have like zero tolerance. I tell first date, I'm like, what's up? Let's check that fucking list. And some guys have been like, you're very intense. And I'm like, no, I'm very honest. If you can't deal with that, we can end this conversation right now. Like, you know, let me know what's up. This one guy told me, I was having a FaceTime date with him. This is like 2 weeks ago. And I'm talking to him and I'm like, how close are you with your parents and, you know, stuff like that? He goes like, well, I'm very close to my dad. I'm like, oh, that's great. He goes, yeah, my mom has had a lot of psychological problems, and I'm like, what do you mean? Like diagnosed? He's like, yeah, I think she's bipolar or something like that. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. I'm like, are you in touch with her? Like, what's that relationship like for you? And he goes, no, not really. I don't really talk to her. He's like, quite frankly, if she died today, I really wouldn't care. And I was like, I think that marks the end of our conversation.
So unattractive to another woman to hear that. You're talking about your mother? Well, that's your view on all women then.
That's correct. That's exactly what it is. And then I asked him, and I was like, how long has your relationship been? He's like, 5 months. I'm like, you're almost 40. What do you mean, 5 months? And I'm like, yeah, I gotta go. I'm like, you should consider therapy. I always leave with that note. Whenever I meet guys like that, I'm like, you should consider therapy. Go to therapy. It's going to help you, you know, go to therapy. Shazia, I know I've kept you here for a bit and I know you have chapatis to make and biryani to cook. Like a good talk. Have you been making chapatis? Like what's been happening for you?
I haven't made chapatis in 20 years. And this lockdown, I thought, why don't I just waste a bit more of my life? So I have been trying to make round chapatis.
Yes!
And honestly, it's so difficult to get them round.
Has it been coming out round? How have they been coming out?
I've been putting a plate on it now and then cutting round it. That's as good
as your mother teach you how to make the chapati? How did you make the chapati?
Yeah, my mum did when I was about 6 or 7 because, you know, I was going to get married at 9.
Sure.
But I think now I've realized I'm probably not going to marry a Pakistani, so who gives a fuck?
Yes, absolutely. Would your parents be okay with you bringing home a white guy or non-Muslim guy?
Listen, I could bring home a donkey now and they would be really pleased.
Because your parents are at the same place my mom is at. Well, my father passed away, so that's one less pressure. So sorry, that sounds really dark. But my mom is just like, you know what my mom told me? She was like, just find someone. If somebody is good, get pregnant.
Pregnant. Just get pregnant. I know.
What? She was like, let's get pregnant. Just have a child.
Just do it. Oh, I'm thinking, well, you spent years telling me not to do it. Now you're telling me to do it.
That's right.
I mean, you never thought this through. You fucked me up. So shut up now and I'll bring home who I like.
Exactly. Have you ever had like boyfriends that you brought home and then been like,
oh, boyfriend? We don't do that. No way. We don't do that.
Like ever.
Which is why I'm still alive. No,
you're alive because you do comedy, Shazia. That's why you're alive.
I mean, comedy. Every comedian will probably say comedy saved their life, and I think in some way, it saved us, from something.
100%, 100%. So, are you on any? So, you're not on any dating apps. You're not going on any dates. Nothing. Zero.
I can't go on the apps, you know, because well, in England, everyone knows me. So that would be weird. That would be really
Shaz,
weird.
You need to come to LA. We need to introduce you to
LA. I love LA.
When are you coming back? We miss you. Come back.
Well, I want to come back when I can travel.
Yeah.
When I won't get infected and die by a virus.
Those are facts.
I mean, I feel really that's the thing I miss most is traveling now. I would have been in LA now as well. So,
yes.
Sad times.
Yes, very, 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 very sad indeed.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh my God, anytime.
Enjoyed it. Very interesting, as always.
Thank you. I always love having you, and we always have these amazing dynamic conversations.
Yeah.
Do you have any shows lined up? I know that
I do. I mean, all my shows are online. And I'm writing loads of stuff. People can follow me on Instagram.
Where can we follow you?
The Shazia Mirza.
Okay.
And on Twitter, I'm Shazia Mirza 1. I don't tweet that much. I'm more on Instagram now. I like pictures.
You like pictures? You know, I would think you would really do really well on Twitter, actually, because it's all in real time.
Twitter's very nasty. And I really prefer Instagram, putting pictures up and looking at stuff. I think there's something therapeutic about that.
Yes. Just seeing it. Pretty pictures.
And do you know what I love most, Mona? I love the filters. I love filtering myself.
The glam one, when you look like garbage and then you put the glam and it's like
immediately. My favorite is Juno. Juno. I shove a bit of Juno on.
Juno is good. Juno is really good. Are you on Facebook too, Shazia, or do you have any like a YouTube channel?
Yeah, I am on Facebook. I'm on Facebook too. So they can find me on there as well.
Just Shazia Mirza. Awesome. Shazia, this was...
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Amazing. You know, you just inspired me, actually, that when you come to LA, we are going to do a live show of this exact same conversation.
I think we should. I think we should sell tickets. I think there should be a Q&A.
Yes.
I think there should be, you know, absolute in conversation with you and some female comics talking about all of this.
We're going to do a Minority Report female... just exclusive female sponsored lineup of comics. And we're going to have this exact same conversation live because I think it's so needed.
It's so needed. So needed.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Mona.
No, thank you. Shazia, I love you. You know how much I love and respect you.
Thank you so much. I'll speak to you soon.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.